And our special guest this hour, Gavin Menzies. We're talking about the lost empire of Atlantis. More when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Gavin Menzies. Gavin, you know, some of the movies on Atlantis shows that they had high technology. They had massive crystals where they garnered the power from the sun and used it to, you know, power up their cities. Did the Minoans on this island of Santorini, did they have these things, do you think?
Not that I know of, George. They did have microscopes and telescopes. We know that from their miniature carvings on seals. But I didn't know they used crystals. However, they were very, very advanced people. They might well have done.
This disruption to them, you know, some of them fled, obviously, by some of the things you've said.
Yes.
But were they ever able to rebuild again? I mean, what's on that island now?
They could never rebuild. What's on the island? There is, it's like a cake with white icing, which is the villages around the edge, in the middle of the cake gouged out. So the center of the island, which is 8 miles across, is an enormous lake. That's where the volcano blew out the middle of the island. Millions or billions of cubic meters of earth. So it's a very, very strange shape. It looks like a sort of croissant with a sea in the center of it and then surrounded by sea. And the villages clinging to the sides of the island like as if they're about to fall in the sea. It's a really weird shape. And before the volcanic eruption, it was a round island 12 miles across, just as Plato described it.
Why do you think there's so many controversial stories about Atlantis?
Well, I think the fact that it was so advanced and suffered such a colossal misfortune, untimely demise, has really interested people. But when you think about it and go into it, it's actually a dead simple story. It's a true story. It's absolutely simple. It was a very advanced civilization who had a trading empire which stretched from the Great Lakes of America all the way across the Atlantic and across the Mediterranean through Egypt to southern India. So it spanned half the world. And across this trading empire, the unifying trade was copper and bronze. The Minoans got copper from the Great Lakes. They got tin from Cornwall in England. And they combined the two to make bronze.
Did they leave any artifacts in North America, Gavin?
Yes, they did. Obviously, if I can just go back a bit.
Okay.
In the wrecks of these ships on the seabed.
Based because of the tsunami?
No, it wasn't actually. It was, I don't know why they were wrecked, but they just an ordinary storm, I think. But anyway, the three ships dated 1600 BC, 1300 BC, and 1100 BC, which have been raised from the seabed and can now be viewed in the museum in Bodrum in Turkey. They were carrying copper. Now, the copper of some of the ingots, not all of the ingots, there have been 340-something in ingots in these ships has been analyzed, and some of the ingots have copper purity of 99.9% pure. That's no arsenic, no silver, no gold, no impurities whatsoever, just pure, pure copper. And the only place in the world that had copper of that purity was the Great Lakes of America. The copper there is 99.9% pure. Or more. So obviously, I wanted to see for myself what's left in the Great Lakes. As you know, American children in school used to be taught until 20 or 30 years ago that Great Lakes copper was taken away by people who came from abroad, and nobody knows where it went. If you add together all the copper artifacts found in North America, or add them all up, they wouldn't account for 1% of the copper that was taken from the Great Lakes. in the mines, which are still there. All the ruins of the mines are still there. Anyway, I decided to go to photograph what's there today, and it's just as if the miners left expecting to come back and continue work next day, and they never did. For example, in the museums around the Great Lakes, there are over 6,000 copper artifacts of various sorts. And those I photographed, and on my website, gavinmenzies.net, and in the book, we have lots and lots of photos of the artifacts left by the miners in the Great Lakes. Now, those can be matched up. They're absolutely identical to artifacts found in the wrecked ships, which I've described off Turkey, dated 1600 BC, 1300 BC, and 1100 BC. And they are absolutely identical artifacts to those found in graves, places like Stonehenge, in graves in Crete and Santorini, and in Egypt, and so on. Now, there's a huge amount of evidence, which I've summarized in my book, of trade between North America, Great Lakes, and the Eastern Mediterranean, and Egypt and India. For example, if you take Egypt, in the mummies of Egyptian pharaohs, which can be very accurately dated, there is evidence that they took tobacco, they either smoked it or they swallowed it, and coca.
Right, that's true. And corn too, right?
And exactly, and corn. Now, coca, tobacco, and corn were all indigenous to the Americas. They weren't found anywhere else, but they're found. The corn is found in carvings of on Egyptian pharaohs' tombs, and the tobacco from North America is found in the stomach of the pharaohs, as is coca. Now, going on from that, DNA studies have been carried out of people from Crete and Santorini all those years ago. And there is to everyone's surprise, they found in the Great Lakes people, the Ojibwa people, that they have this unique haplogroup called X-ray 2. So basically the founding people in the Americas had DNA A, B, C, and D, but the people around the Great Lakes also have X-ray 2. Now, X-ray 2 is found where the Minoans originated from, which is Anatolia, where they made their bases, that's Crete and Santorini, where they traded, that's the Western Mediterranean, Southwest Spain, Northwest France, the Orkney Islands, and the Great Lakes. So everywhere that the Minoans originated from, settled, and traded with, has this strange X-ray 2 haplogroup. So I say that DNA does not lie. That in itself is absolute proof that the Minoan people were those who mined the copper in the Great Lakes.
So they got there way even before the Chinese.
Far, far before, 3,000 years before. The mines in the Great Lakes on Ile Royale and the peninsula, I don't know how to pronounce it, Keweenaw Peninsula, they were worked between 2,500 BC and about 1,400 BC, and then they suddenly stopped. So when the eruption in Santorini happened, all mining activity ceased in the Great Lakes and other places where the Minoans were mining, Cornwall and southwest Spain and so on.
Wiped them out.
Sorry?
Wiped them out. It wiped them out, didn't it?
Yeah, wiped them out. Yeah, absolutely.
Let's take some phone calls here. People interested in your work. East of the Rockies, we've got Ron out there in Iowa. Go ahead, Ron.
Ron, how
hey, George.
Ron.
I was actually wondering if your guest and that other gentleman, the one who deciphered Linear A, had ever actually compared the Minoan language of Linear A to the Voynich manuscript. Because when you look through that, a lot of the pictures in there do resemble the description of Plato's Atlantis. And if it's written in Linear A, that could have very well been written by either a survivor of the incident or the descendant of somebody from the incident, in which case it would offer a lot of insight into Minoan culture that you're not going to get from anybody else.
Ron, that's extremely interesting. Could you possibly send me an email to menses at clara.net?
Well, you better spell that, Gavin.
I don't have a pen and paper. I'm actually out driving right now.
Okay, well, he can get to you from
your website. I
said my
phone number so he could contact me.
Yeah, give me your phone number, Ron.
Okay, well, I'll do that, Ron. We'll put you on hold for that as well. What do you find to be the most revealing evidence about the lost empire of Atlantis?
Well, first of all, that it is exactly described by Plato, and he couldn't have made it up. Secondly, the DNA. Thirdly, what's been found in the holds of these ships. You can see for these wrecked ships, wrecked in 1600 BC, 1300 or 1100, that they had goods in their holds, which came from India, Africa, Baltic, and North America. And in all of those places I've been to and I've photographed, the artifacts that have been found. And the artifacts are all the same. If you take kitchen equipment, bronze kitchen equipment, you take farming implements, take weapons, offensive and defensive, take jewelry, copper and bronze jewelry, you take woodworking tools, whatever aspect of bronze you like to choose, either it can be found in the holds of these ships on the seabed of the Mediterranean, or in Crete, or in Santorini, or in the other places they settled. For example, the tombs at Stonehenge and the Great Lakes and India all have common designs of razors. People were very fond of being clean shaven, the men were. Hmm. And they had a razor which is virtually identical right the way across their trading empire.
That's amazing, too. I mean, so there are similarities throughout the various areas.
Yes, and again, if you go to my website, gavinmenses.net, you'll see lots of photos. We've got a full page of photos comparing what's been found in the wreck on the seabed of the Eastern Mediterranean with what's been found in the Great Lakes.
Nice. What do you think Christopher Columbus would say if he knew all this?
Well, I don't want to disparage Christopher Columbus. The more I've read about him, the cleverer he gets. He really ran rings around the King and Queen of Spain. He's very, very clever. Now, what he did was of inestimable value to Europeans because he worked out the winds in the Atlantic, how you could sail before the wind to get to America, and then how you could sail from America again with the wind to get home, which was, of course, of colossal importance.
Of course.
What he didn't do was he did not discover America. Now, why do I say that? Because, first of all, he had a map. He admits he had a map.
Well, and he knew it. That's right.
Yeah. In my book, 1434, I show the map. He had a map showing him the way to the Americas, and he accepts that in his will, last testament, and in his effects found after his death.
Is it a crude map, Gavin, or is it pretty good?
It's very, very good. It's a world map. Very, very good. And what you see, Columbus was very brave, very clever. He sailed with the wind from southern Spain, from the Guadalquivir River. And nobody had done that before. They'd all tried to sort of hug the land. Well, he sailed straight out into the Atlantic with the wind.
Yeah.
Which meant that it would be very difficult for him to turn around and get back because he'd have to sail into the wind to get home. Now, his crew realized this, and after 21 days at sea, they had come to the conclusion they weren't going to last much longer because they just about finished their food and they got...
They were ready to mutiny, weren't they?
Exactly. Exactly that, George. They were ready to mutiny. And Columbus quashed the incipient mutiny by calling all his crew onto the upper deck and telling them, look, I know where we are, because before I left Spain, I saw in the King of Portugal's library a map which showed the islands we're searching for. If we carry on a little longer, we'll find them. That's a a paraphrase, but an accurate one. So his sailors were convinced, they believed him, and on they sailed. Now, the other thing Columbus said, apart from having a map, he also had a contract. And the contract was with the King of Spain to appoint him, Columbus, as Viceroy of the Americas. He wasn't going to try and find China or anything like that. He was going to be Viceroy of what they weren't called the Americas, they called the lands.
That's what he wanted. Yeah.
Exactly. On behalf of the King of Spain. So Columbus knew where he was going from his map, and he knew what his duty was when he got there. He was to be Viceroy. So he relied on much earlier maps. Now, the Chinese had been sailing backwards and forwards to the Americas for many, many centuries, and they had, before 1421, in 1418, they produced a world map. That's reproduced in my book, 1434. So Columbus had that. Now, the Minoans, they were 3,000 years before Columbus and nearly 3,000 years before the Chinese. So they were in a different league altogether. So they were truly awesome.
How did Columbus get the map, Gavin?
The Chinese admiral, Zheng He, was sent by the Emperor of China to the Pope. The Pope was very important to the Chinese. He was a sort of figurehead of Western civilization. And Zheng He sent us as an ambassador, and he went to Florence, where the Pope was exiled, had been exiled from Rome to Florence, and they met up in Florence, and there's records in Italy of the meeting. And he presented world maps to the Pope, the ambassador from China, on behalf of the Chinese emperor. And he also presented astronomical tables, which were ephemeris tables, which would enable sailors to be able to calculate latitude and longitude sailing from the Mediterranean to America and back. So from the year 1434, European ships had both maps to reach America and they had tables which would enable them to calculate their position at sea. Now, Christopher Columbus used these tables. He was a very, very good mathematician. Through no fault of his own, he worked out the wrong longitude, but it wasn't his fault. He'd been given the wrong information. So that really changed maritime exploration as far as the West was concerned.
Okay, let's go to some more calls here for you. David in Florence, Arizona. Hey, David, you're on with us. Go ahead.
Yes, good good morning, George.
David, good morning to you.
I would like to share some observations from a class that I took back in the 1970s. It was called Man in the Arts. Man in the Arts. We looked at ancient history by way of art and architecture. And one of the things that Professor Alish pointed out was that the ancient Grecian civilization declined because they had two periods of history: the Hellenic period, in which they prospered and they developed, and they were very innovative, but they eventually entered into the Hellenistic period, in which they wanted to make they wanted to look at everything too much. They even emptied out towns and made museums out of towns just to admire their achievements, and they began their great decline. They had been a great civilization, but
it sounds familiar, David, doesn't it? Almost like some things we do. We'll be back with more on Coast to Coast AM. And our special guest this hour, of course, Gavin Menzies. We're talking about his work, The Lost Empire of Atlantis. It's a great read. Let's come back with some more stories and some more calls on Coast to Coast AM. We're with Gavin Menzies. Gavin, Plato talked about how Atlantis was a naval power, that they were aggressors. Did you find that to be the case?
Yes, that's right. They got greedy, and they sailed from America with a load of copper to attack Greece. And Plato says the gods then decided to destroy them. But that's a euphemism for the volcanic eruption and the tsunami, which did destroy them. So they did get greedy. They did have a huge, wonderful civilization before that, and they were destroyed in a day and a night.
Jim is in Santa Monica, California, and he's on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Gavin.
Hi.
Hi, Jim.
The city of Atlantis was destroyed from the last time Planet X was here, the shift. That was 15 BC, like 3,600 years ago. And it's like now the volcano, when Planet X comes around, it's like happening now. The volcanoes get excited. They blow off. The tsunami that went into the Nile. That's when Moses took off and ran with his people. That's, in my research and study, that's what caused the city of Atlantis. And as far as their highly intelligent civilization, they could have been in contact with the Nubarians, you know, from the planet.
Well, Jim, that's very interesting. We've had a lot of emails from readers of my book saying that there was a lunar eclipse in 1456 BC when the moon and the sun were in line and therefore could exert very strong pull on the Earth. And that's what started off the volcanic eruption. And the volcanic eruption, which came in 1450 and sent this huge tsunami across the Mediterranean, the tsunami could have traveled up the Nile Delta and created turmoil in Lower Egypt, flooding the land and creating very unhealthy conditions, hence the great plagues. So there are quite a lot of people who have sent us emails arguing much the same as you have.
Oh, 3,600 years ago, 15 BC, around the time of Moses leaving. The last time Planet X was here. See, Planet X is here now, and it's going to be causing problems, and there's still going to be the ship. I called up about a month ago on Planet X tonight. So that was why the city of Atlantis was lost. And like I said about their intelligence, they could be in contact with alien races because, you know, like Nancy Leader from Zeta Talk, you have dreams and you see, you know, advanced stuff. But, like, I think James Cameron was an executive director on a DVD, Exodus Decoded, and he talks about Moses leaving, Santorini blowing up. And it was, and I want to get a hold of him because he's over here in Santa Monica, too, and tell him, well, there's a missing common denominator, it's the Planet X factor.
That's interesting. And you think the explosion, the volcanic eruption, was about 1500 BC, right?
Yeah, 1450 BC, and the lunar and solar eclipse was in 1456 BC.
Let's go to Peter in Springfield, Massachusetts. Peter, you're on with Gavin. Go ahead.
Peter, good morning.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's a privilege speaking with you tonight.
Sure thing.
Well, thank you very much.
I was wondering, what you mentioned earlier that the people that they found underneath the lava bedrock in Sahara,
yeah,
that they were gone, that there were no people there.
Right.
So they fled. Do you know by any chance where they went to next, if there's a similar labyrinth?
Yeah, I think almost certainly they went to Crete. And those who settled on the northern shore of Crete, the palaces there, they were obliterated by the tsunami. That was their big home base, I think.
Okay, Peter. Wherever you are. Adam in Wilmington, Illinois. Welcome to the show. Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, I wanted to ask your guest. The Chinese, you said, found America way before Columbus, like a few thousand years. Well, I always thought Native Americans, a lot of tribes, always looked like of an Asian descent. I was just wondering if maybe that's where some of them might have here in America originated from.
I think definitely, Adam. There is a very comprehensive DNA survey being carried out on the indigenous peoples of North America. And if you go to our website, gavinmenzies.net, then go to the 1421 section, then go to DNA, you'll find details of this DNA survey carried out by Gabriel Novick, N-O-V-I-C-K, and his colleagues. And it compares the DNA of a lot of indigenous American people with Chinese. And as you so rightly say, there is very, very close similarity. Now, the interesting thing is that the similarities, I think, show that the people must have acquired their East Asian DNA at more or less the same time. And if you study Gabriel Novick and colleagues' DNA report, that you may come to the same conclusion. So if you want to email me after you've read the report, I'd be only too happy to discuss it further with you, Adam.
To me, it's more romantic to think, Evan, that Atlantis was a city that had incredible technology, flying craft, and all these things, and that some kind of catastrophe occurred by their own doing. But I guess the reality is Plato and your research probably are pretty right, don't you think?
Well, George, what we haven't talked about is the city. As you so rightly say, the palaces were extremely advanced. 3,500 years ago, the Minoans, who I say is the people of Atlantis, they built four-story houses. The houses had translucent marble roofs, so they acted as windows. They had hot and cold running water. They had flushing toilets. They ate very well. They improved the strains of animals, goats in particular, so they got fatter and tastier. They had all sorts of vegetables and fruits to eat. The women were beautifully dressed. They had strapless bras, high-heeled shoes. The women had wonderful jewelry, copper and bronze, and various semi-precious stones. They drank wine and beer. All in all, and above all, they were a peaceful society. There were no walls which surrounded their cities and palaces. So they were very advanced people who loved dancing and drama and theater. They could read. They were just streets ahead of anyone else. They were 1,000 years ahead of Greece. Amazing people.
Truly remarkable. Why was it isolated, Gavin, to that region? I mean, there weren't any other areas on the planet. The Egyptians weren't that well possessed of knowledge and technology, were they?
The Egyptians were pretty good. For example, I gave earlier, they had pi, ratio between circumference and radius of a circle, worked out to 3. The Minoans got it to 3.14159, and same with phi. So the Egyptians were very knowledgeable, but they didn't have seagoing ships like the Minoans did, or not that I've been able to find anyway. So they were really relied on the Nile. The Nile brought water and fertility down from Africa, and they could have a civilization just by the banks of the Nile, which is effectively what they did.
Let's go to Philadelphia, east of the Rockies. John's with us. Go ahead, John. John, welcome to the show. Well, I guess there's no John. Let's go to Don in Salem, Oregon. Don, it's your turn.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey.
I didn't mean to interrupt you there. what you guys are talking about kind of leads me to my question. Why is the Greek government so reluctant to allow any archaeologists, divers to go and, study the island of Santorini and under the water? Maybe they don't want anybody to know, which baffles me because I'd want everybody to know if my civilization was that advanced.
Well, Don, good morning. I'm not too sure if it's deliberate order of the Greek government. You're quite right. You can't see Akrotiri excavations at the moment, but as I understand it, and I might be wrong, that was because there was a sad accident 3 or 4 years ago when the corrugated roof, which they'd constructed to keep the sun off the workers, collapsed and people were killed and so on. So the site is out of bounds. But as I understand it, that's only temporary, and then people will be able to go and see for themselves this amazing city in southern Santorini.
Tell us a little bit more about the Minoan Linear A decoded by the good doctor.
Well, Dr. Minas Sikritsis is a mathematician and also a study. He has studied Greek and Minoan languages for the past 20 years. Crito-Minoan, Mycenaean, Crypto-Mycenaean, Linear A and Linear B. Linear A, as far as he is aware, is the world's first written language. It's advanced. As I said, it was found describing mathematical and geometric progression.
Did they get into astronomy?
It got into astronomy, yes. In my opinion, they had the tools, Minoans, to calculate longitude. So Copernicus, and they also knew the correct way the universe worked, that Earth was one planet of many circling the sun.
Truly amazing.
Rather than the sun circling the Earth. And they built on that, and I think that they did, by using a certain amount of Mesopotamian mathematics, they could calculate longitude, and therefore they could work out where they were at sea, and that explains how they could find their way back to Crete from Egypt.
Next up, we have Mike in Minneapolis, and you're on the air. Go ahead, Mike.
Gentlemen, thank you. Really enjoying the show tonight.
Thank you.
My question is, concerning the placement of Atlantis, there's been an assumption by a lot of folks that Plato is, when he speaks of it being beyond the Pillars of Hercules, that it would be out in the Atlantic. Could you address that a little bit? Because
yes,
the Pillars of Hercules is associated with Gibraltar, isn't that true?
Yes, Mike, but I don't think he says it's beyond. He said they were beyond, and I agree with that, because they were in America. And Pillars of Hercules is the Straits of Gibraltar. So to get to the Americas, my argument is that they got copper from the Great Lakes by sailing across the Mediterranean through the Straits of Gibraltar, and then they picked up the current, which flows in a huge clockwise oval loop, year in, year out, carrying ships from Europe, southern Spain, to the Caribbean, and then to North America, and then back via the Gulf Stream. So what Plato describes, them sailing from an island, Plato describes America as an island as big as Egypt and Libya combined, which is what it is. Egypt and Libya in those days was Africa, or North Africa. So I say Plato describes exactly what in fact happened. They did sail back across the Atlantic from the copper mines, bringing copper. They did attack Greece, and they paid the penalty.
I think that's exciting, though, these discoveries, these ancient discoveries of so many incredible things that have happened to this planet. Because one of the things, Gavin, I think it shows us is what could happen to us today.
Yes.
I mean, those volcanoes could go at any time, can't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that we don't really understand the effect the sun has to start with, whether global warming is, in effect, what the sun's doing or what humans are doing. I really don't know, but I couldn't agree more. I think we could be wiped out any day.
Let's go to Baltimore. Mike's with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, there's a theory which has come to light that the ancient Atlanteans warred with the ancient East Indians and were destroyed by a gravity bomb. Somebody has translated this from the ancient Sanskrit, that doesn't give an idea of the location of Atlantis, but it says that both ancient civilizations were capable of space travel, and that they warred in outer space and on the Earth, and that Atlantis was destroyed by some sort of super high-tech bomb. Also, you mentioned Columbus's maps. There's a book called Maps of the Ancient Sea Kings by Hapgood, which shows these ancient maps with longitude and latitude. And I hope something that Mr. Norrie can take back to the producers of Ancient Aliens, that the supposedly ancient satellite that's up in the sky, the Dark Knight satellite or whatever, Black Knight satellite, if we can get into that, just, you know, not so much as Ancient Aliens, but ancient civilizations that warred and existed and came and gone. And I'll take my answer.
Well, that's, Mike, I'm looking at this moment on what is pinned to the refrigerator door at home, which is by Professor Hapgood. Now, as you know, what Professor Hapgood did is he produced a Piri Reis map, and he said that this was drawn up by a very old civilization, and he got laughed at by all the professors and so on. And he said, I teach the history of science, and I've become aware of the extent to which most radical discoveries, which are sometimes called breakthroughs, have been opposed by experts in the affected fields. It is a fact, obviously, that every scientist is an amateur to start with. Copernicus, Newton, and Darwin were all amateurs when they made their principal discoveries. Through the course of long years of work, they became specialists in the fields which they created, underlined. However, a specialist who starts out by learning what everybody else has done before him is not likely to initiate anything very new. An expert is a man who knows everything, or nearly everything, and usually thinks he knows everything important in the field. At least, if he doesn't know anything, he knows other people know less, and amateurs know nothing. So I thought that was rather a good summary of Professor Hapgood's riposte to his critics.
Kevin, what's been the reaction to the Lost Empire of Atlantis in terms of thumbs up? Well, they don't agree with your theories. What has it been?
Well, I've been very surprised. I thought I was going to get torn to shreds, but there are five emeritus professors: John Sorensen, Carl Johannesson, John Coughlin, Carol Riley, and Betty Meggers, who have kindly written to me saying how much they enjoyed the book and how they reckon it makes sense. In other words, they support what I've written. As far as the public is concerned, the book was published on the 25th of October. We've had five reviews on Amazon, four of the five are five-star, one is four-star, so the average is five-star reviews.
Well, good for you, Gavin. And let me get the name of the book out again for everybody. The Lost Empire of Atlantis, and Gavin's website, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, Joshua P. Warren and his paranormal moment. He'll tell you what happened after Halloween.